Welcome to Motivation Insiders, the podcast that explores the way incentive, recognition, and loyalty programs are designed, implemented, and measured. We look at motivation with an exclusive view from, well, the inside. Motivation Insiders is an ongoing podcast designed and produced by the IESP, the Incentive Engagement Solution Providers of the Incentive Marketing Association. My name is Paul Nolan. I'm the editor of Sales and Marketing Management and the host of this podcast. In this episode, we're going to talk about incentive travel. I was thinking that it's a little odd for me to talk about incentive travel because I've never actually been part of an incentive travel campaign. I have worked for employers who held one-day offsites as a celebration of success and team-building exercise. They were fun and memorable to this day, even though some of them occurred more than 20 years ago. I have been on a number of business trips, of course, and in fact, I have one scheduled for mid-July. As I registered for that event, booked my flight, and reserved a room, I became conscious of the significant cost of sending me to represent sales and marketing management. It's a compliment in itself that my bosses feel it's worth the investment to have me participate in that conference, and the cost will be on my mind while I'm there. I can only imagine the impact, the positive vibes, that one gets if I was treated to a four-day or five-day incentive travel experience. Not only me, but a significant other as well, since most of these programs include an and-one component. As one of the guests on this episode states, incentive travel is the top of the pyramid for reward options. They are a significant investment, to be sure, but they have the potential to create lifetime memories and an enduring bond between the individual and the program sponsor, whether that's an employer, a channel partner, or some other business relationship. I think one reason I have not participated in an incentive travel program is because through the decades, they have mostly been used to motivate internal sales teams, independent reps, or channel partners. I have always been on the editorial side of things and have never worked in a sales role. It was a long-standing tenet that incentive travel programs should be self-funding. That is, the bump in revenue from higher sales goals that were built into the program paid for the cost of the trip and then some. As you will learn from our guests, however, incentive travel programs are not just for sales teams any longer. Company leaders recognize the importance of non-sales workers on their teams, and they are increasingly developing incentive travel programs in which these workers can earn their way on a group trip as well. While I have not participated in an incentive travel program myself, our two guests on this podcast have decades of experience in the incentive travel industry. Annette Gregg is the CEO of the Society for Incentive Travel Excellence, SITE, a global nonprofit association whose members are suppliers and users of incentive travel. Prior to taking on that role last fall, Annette served in leadership roles for Meeting Professionals International, and she ran incentive travel programs for an employer in the financial industry. Lincoln Smith is the Chief Strategy Officer at HMI Performance Incentives, a Massachusetts-based designer of incentive solutions that has its roots in incentive travel. HMI Performance Incentives is a sponsor of this episode of Motivation Insiders. We are grateful for their support and encourage listeners to learn more about HMI at hmiaward.com. Their contact page has a quick form that you can complete to start a conversation about working with them to achieve your business goals through incentive programs. For obvious reasons, incentive travel programs shut down during the COVID pandemic. People around the world are hungry to travel again now, and incentive travel has rebounded as a result, even more so than business travel. Surveys by SITE indicate that companies are planning to be back at pre-pandemic levels of spending on incentive travel by 2024. Annette Gregg says the new world of hybrid work life makes it all the more important to bring teams together through incentive travel events.
We have this opportunity to really fill the gap of really building team and community with this online world that we're living in now. Even post-pandemic, so many companies haven't gone back to work full-time in offices. And our research is showing that now these creators of programs and also the internal owners of these incentive travel programs are really seeing them as a powerful tool to build community and camaraderie. Because these people aren't together that much anymore. And so that's another reason why I think we're seeing such a powerful rebound.
Remember I talked about how incentive travel has historically been a vehicle to motivate salespeople? Well, a recent survey of incentive travel suppliers and users indicates that 2/3 of buyers state they are placing a greater focus on soft power benefits, such as company culture and engagement, over increased sales. Lincoln Smith says the important component when including non-sales personnel in an incentive travel program is to assign a value to the actions that you want them to achieve to earn their place on the trip.
Yeah, there might be a myriad of different goals or behaviors. You know, I think the key there, Paul, is to, you know, identify who your target audience is, and then what are the primary goals and objectives that that professional should be achieving that has a value to your organization. Sales is the easiest one to identify and measure and justify as an action that would warrant an incentive reward. I think the key here is that for non-sales roles, there are either jobs or tasks or objectives that should be kind of inventoried and identified. Can you track those behaviors or those activities? And then can you put some kind of value that might be associated with it? Being able to identify it, track it, and then put some sort of measurement on it is really important. So in some instances, it might be more learning and enablement oriented. So can you quantify someone that becomes certified or more knowledgeable about a product? How much more likely are they to become successful? And can you put a value that might be associated with that?
Is it incumbent on the client to figure out what the value is of those non-revenue generating tasks are? Or do you actually dig in and help them say, well, you know, we know that action X or action Y leads to sales. Do you help them, as you say, monetize certain non-sales actions?
We do. You know what, we're the advisors in the process, and that's as an incentive performance improvement organization. That's our roles, is to provide the best practices and models and insights and really advise them and lead them along the way. At the end of the day, it's always their business and their budgets, and they have such intimacy with their market, their industry. So we feel like it's more of a collaborative approach rather than us telling them or them telling us, but we kind of guide them through and then come to consensus to build out the right structure, the right communications, the right target audience, and then again, put the right reward value for those particular activities. And it's exciting, you know, where we're at today in the market is that these programs have just become so much more sophisticated. Again, they're a little bit less one-dimensional, and there's lots of different areas now that we can include different customer segments, different behaviors, and really kind of help round out whatever those business goals and objectives are through the form of an incentive program.
Another interesting factor to consider in incentive travel programs is the younger age of many participants and what they like to get out of travel. Research shows that Gen Z and millennial workers enjoy experiencing local cultures authentically instead of that tourist feeling. Perhaps more importantly, research shows that this younger set isn't as wowed by FaceTime with top-level executives as older workers may have been as they advance their careers. Instead, they want plenty of free time on group trips to pursue the activities they wish. I spoke with both Greg and Smith about these findings and how they impact the designs of group incentive travel programs.
We have to, as program designers, take them to places that are unique, take them to places that maybe they know, but we have to position them in a different way. And we have to offer them experiences that, again, they just can't get on their own. The authenticity is another thing that they're looking for. You know, this qualifier and this new traveler, younger traveler, they don't want to go and have this kind of shiny experience. They want to go where the locals go. They want to experience what the locals experience. They want authenticity. They don't want it faked. So that is really up to the destination supply chain, working with their suppliers that are in that destination to get access to these unique assets in the destination, to position it in a way. And again, give them this behind the scenes unique experience they couldn't get on their own as a traveler.
There are also some characteristics of this younger traveler, younger participant, that I think are interesting and important to have you comment on. They maybe don't see time with the C-suite mm-hmm. as attractive as people might have 15 or 20 years ago. The statistics that come out of your reports and IRF reports talk about the desire for more free time on these events mm-hmm. Or time with a significant other. Some of these things play against the reason for having a group travel event in the sense that you want to build camaraderie. You want to have team building events that they say they don't really want to have their schedule filled up with team building events. Yep. Talk about the challenge when they say what they want might go against the goals of the company sponsoring a program.
Yeah, I think this is really interesting stuff, Paul. And you're right. You know, the recent IRF survey, they just came out with their own participant insights, and that had some really clear results there that, you know, these new qualifiers, they want their own path. They want their own journey, right, while they're on site at these places. Mm-hmm. So, and like to your point, when I look at the respondents from the leadership side and the meeting organizer, or the, we'll just call it the planner side, they're prioritizing activities that promote relationship building between these qualifiers and the leadership. So we have to really listen to our audiences, and we as the designers can't go in and create all these group activities because we're trying to create camaraderie again in the virtual world we're living in. And meanwhile, your qualifier just wants to time with his or, his or her partner. So I just think there's a balance. I think that it starts with really understanding your audience. Where do they fall on this spectrum? Even though we know what we know from this survey data, every company is going to have a different persona to it and every qualifier. So I would say start with knowing your audience. Are they ones that are okay with getting together? Because there's also a lot of our results showed about they're still valuing things like an awards dinner, an awards ceremony, where mm-hmm. if I just went off that first data point, I would think, oh gosh, they don't even want to get together for dinner anymore. But mm-hmm. yet they still value that and getting honored in front of their peers. So kind of understanding your audience. And I think secondly is, it's okay to have a balance. You know, I mean, the company and the business, they have objectives and things they want to accomplish with this more than just, hey, you win a trip, we're going to take you out to the Caribbean, go ahead and spend time with your spouse. You know, the company, it's okay to have some structure to it because the company needs to achieve some things and they want to make sure they're getting the results that they desire out of it. And mm-hmm. camaraderie is part of that. So I think it's all in the communication. Really is creating a really clear expectation as the qualifiers are getting excited about this trip is, hey, you'll have plenty of time to enjoy with your guests. We want you to self-discovery. And we're going to create some really unique experiences because our leadership team really wants to spend time with you. So it can't be the same old, you know, just stick them all in a room and around some tabletops or whatever. But let's think of some unique ways. You know, maybe it's a morning walk with the CEO. And 20 mm-hmm. people get handpicked to be on that. So it's just a little bit more creativity, but I think we could accomplish both sides of that coin.
Lincoln Smith emphasizes that participants' preferences need to be considered not only for the on-site agendas, but also in how you launch a program and promote it through the months that participants are striving to earn their way on the trip.
You know, we look at it a little bit differently. Rather than just looking at it as generational, is we really want to get a deeper level of personalization and segmentation of the target audience. And we feel like generational or age is one element to consider, but, you know, life stage is another one. Of course, their age, their gender, and then any other types of preferences, you know, even their social economic profiles are also things that need to be considered. And tailoring the communications is really important throughout the promotional period. Based off of those segments, what might be interesting to you, Paul, might be quite different than what your daughter, as an example, that might be participating in a program. Now, it might be the same destination with the same rules and the same earning criteria, but how I might communicate and engage each of my participants that might be a little bit more exciting or meaningful of what this experience is going to mean to them is really important. So it's not just how to design the group incentive travel experience at the destination. It's really how you market and promote it and engage these audience members to get them excited and motivated and know that the program is going to be exciting based off of their, you know, their profile.
Program design is what companies like HMI Performance Incentives are all about. I've spoken with company leaders that take a do-it-yourself approach to a group trip, but the complexity of booking airfare, hotel, ground transportation, reserving banquet space, choosing menus, having backups to backups, and putting crisis management plans in place, not to mention putting the structure of a program launch and communication throughout the months leading up to the trip, all of that generally makes it more sensible to work with an incentive travel professional to create a program. Here's Lincoln Smith.
Well, I think the big element that HMI Performance Incentives has invested in and where we've kind of gone with our clients is just being so much more strategic. Providing the business results is paramount. How we see group incentive travel or just the incentive industry as a whole is really diving in to, you know, the data of the program goals and objectives. How do we track that? And what data insights can we be bringing back to the client to help them drive the results that they're looking for is really a big component of what we do today. And I mentioned segmentation, sales data, goal tracking, looking at product mix, we're looking at margin, we're looking at other key behaviors as it pertains to the loyalty program and or their business as a whole, but really trying to get a better understanding of how these incentive programs can help drive business results. And, you know, that intimacy and that approach, you know, has evolved over the last several years. So that's one component. And then the second component is really the behavioral science and the behavioral economics principles. And that really comes down to the psychology of how to motivate and encourage particular behaviors. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's kind of the left brain and the right brain activities. One's more data-driven, more business-oriented. And then the other part of it is the psychological part of, you know, how to really design these programs that are going to pull and tap into that emotional components of these individuals to be more engaged in the program, have better affinity for the sponsoring brand. So I think that those are the two pieces that I've seen the biggest leap at HMI, and I think within the industry as a whole.
I want to ask you to drill a little deeper on one more thing, and that is your role in post-program analysis and what are the most important metrics to analyze.
Going back to, you know, our excellence approach, where we help with the exploration, envisioning what the program should be, executing it, and then evaluating it. And I had mentioned that the evaluation takes place throughout the program. So on day one, we're looking at how things are working, and then throughout the program, and then, of course, post-program. Now, there are two components for a group incentive travel program that we're oftentimes looking at. One is the business results. Did we achieve the goals and objectives that we set out for at the beginning of the program and we tracked towards those? What is our return on the program itself? So those are things that are kind of ongoing. Now, post-program, we also want to create additional engagement and feedback from the audience. And we're oftentimes taking a look at those that earn the travel experience and then getting their feedback post-program. And then we're also surveying and getting data from non-earners as well. And I think it's important post-program is to always take a look at, you know, the business results and what kind of return you received from the program. And then you also want to take a look at what the experience was for those award earners and how did that travel experience, what insights can you glean on what was really important to them? What things might be able to be improved from either a program structure, either from a ongoing communications, and then also on site, what worked, what didn't work. And then if they have any advice for, you know, the future promotion that you're about to design. And again, it can be all those components of destinations, inclusions, frequency of communications, the goals that were set forth for them, but getting feedback at the conclusion of the program is extremely important.
Here are Annette Gregg's thoughts on post-event follow-up.
Yeah, I really like that question because it is kind of human nature for us to just kind of drop it and move on to the next program, especially because a lot of these program designers have multiple things they're working on. You know, they don't get the luxury of just planning the one incentive program each year. So I think a really well-crafted post-event survey is really critical for us to, as event owners, to really understand the ROI. So if you can find a way to, there's kind of that qualitative and then there's quantitative. We'll start with the quantitative. Can you measure results 3 months later, 6 months later? You know, can you say, hey, because I went on this incentive program, I produced more because of, you know, either the learning I got or the touch points I got with leadership. You know, now I'm already ahead of where I was last year in my sales goal. You know, can you kind of check in and see what kind of results that kind of that touch point had on future behavior as mm-hmm. far as driving revenue? And then even just the quality of the relationship, you know, how has that relationship with that qualifier deepened and grown because of the program they went on? So I think it's really kind of creating community. That's what you're trying to do while you're with these folks for 5 days is let's get them sticky in their relationships with each other, with leadership, and with the company. Because if they feel more sticky with it, then they're going to produce more. It's just back to kind of like, hey, I'm more invested. So mm-hmm. I'm driven and I'm motivated by this goal of this wonderful destination next year for the trip. But I can be a top performer with any company. I know myself. So why am I going to stick with this company and this group of people? It's because it's a community I get to travel with year after year. And these are the people, they're my people, you know? Mm-hmm. So I think that what we can do with a well-crafted communication plan, find a way for them to communicate with each other, really create kind of this exclusive club kind of feeling, share pictures, visuals, keep those memories going. I think that would be a wonderful year-round program if we had the resources and time.
SITE and other incentive associations have extensive research on trends regarding destinations for group travel programs and the impact of the destination choice. We will link to these research reports in the show notes for this episode. Cities, states, and countries have political personas nowadays. We have seen major sports leagues relocate all-star games in recent years because of a state's stance on a certain political issue. Meeting and travel trade publications have reported that the political persona of a state like Florida, for example, has resulted in some groups relocating conferences or other group events to different locations. Greg shared her thoughts on how headlines may impact group travel destination decisions.
I do think that destination consideration is a factor right now. And it has been for a while, but you know, as we're more aware of political choices that certain destinations are making, or even the safety of certain destinations, I think we as organizers really need to be aware that that noise is out there. And that is very accessible information that is barraging our participants all the time. So if you're going to a destination that might have a current issue with crime, that communication is very critical, that communication conduit, and how are we counteracting that negative perception that's out there. I know a few destinations are dealing with that, and they're having some open house discussions. They're giving the show organizers talking points about this is what the media is saying, but in comparison, this is how safe we are, or this is what it's going to look like when you get here. And so we just need to kind of increase the communication around safety or the politics of a destination if you're choosing one that's in the middle of something.
Both Greg and Lincoln Smith emphasize the importance of creating what they call authentic experiences. Smith says authenticity is as critical for the program sponsor as it is to the participants on a group travel event.
And that's become more and more important to clients, and I think the market in general. And that's the key word is authenticity. How do you create a program theme and a communications campaign and a group incentive travel experience that's authentic to the corporate brand and the values that they want to instill and promote to that audience, and making sure that it is completely integrated and communicated in a consistent way from day one of your program, and then ultimately on the very last day of the final night of your travel experience. Your corporate brand and identity and who you want to be seen as is really important And we've seen us trying to create corporate social responsibility initiatives into every program that we're running today. And that means something that they have certain missions or sponsorships that are being communicated throughout the promotion. And then it also oftentimes means that they're doing something that's maybe on site to give back to either that local community or a particular cause, or bringing more awareness actually in that group experience itself. I look at these programs as an opportunity to promote why they should be doing business with you. And everything from the program design, what your goals are, all the communication touch points, the theme of your promotion, and the experience needs to exude that and do it with purpose and do it in a way that is super authentic because people can see through that. So making sure that the experience, the theme, and the communications have that common thread is super important. And corporations today are being much more diligent with that.
Well, this is where I ask you if there are things that we have not talked about that you'd want to bring up.
Well, I think most organizations that are embarking on a group incentive travel strategy always ask, can we afford it? And what kind of return can I expect? Those are questions that you hear all the time. I think in today's market, post-COVID, prices are up. You know, their demand is up. Availability is tight. So the cost of doing these programs is actually up. And my advice in talking to clients today is to strongly recommend that they don't cut on the experience. Even if they have budgetary issues, you never want to water down the experience. It has a direct correlation to their brand preference and the experience that they're going to have with you as an organization. What I would advise is coming up with the right business goals, the objectives, and the investment as a whole, knowing that the costs of running these programs have increased. Don't cheapen the experience itself, but think creatively on how it still can be delivered in an economical way. And a couple of things that come to mind is, one, instead of it being a 5-night program, maybe it's just a 4-night program. Now, you're not cutting on the hotel caliber or the excursions in the experience. You might be just kind of shaving off a night, but the experience itself is still a high experience, or maybe shifting to a different month or shifting it to a couple of weeks might make a big difference on the cost of the hotel, as an example, but you're still not watering down or lessening the experience itself. That would be one of the things that I'm hearing a lot of, is it's more expensive to run these programs today. How do I maintain an experience that my customers are going to really appreciate that represents my brand appropriately? And, you know, working with an agency like HMI, we can kind of help think through elements that are appropriate for the investment, but also doesn't cheapen the overarching experience. You know, we believe it's the top of the pyramid for reward systems. You know, most organizations would like to do it. Not all organizations can do it. Not all programs have the right budget or the right audience where it could even be done. But where it can be, it should certainly be the most, you know, you should definitely be trying to structure programs that could deliver a group incentive travel program, because those relationships and the memory and the trophy value that that you're able to gain with these individuals are priceless.
As Lincoln Smith says, incentive travel programs may not be a fit for every company or every business goal. But if you do have critical team-wide business goals, whether they are directly related to sales or sales adjacent, an incentive travel program can be a force multiplier. Thanks for checking out this episode of Motivation Insiders. This podcast is a co-production of the Incentive and Engagement Solution Providers, IESP, the Incentive Marketing Association, and Sales and Marketing Management. Thanks too to our incentive travel experts who shared their insights in this episode, Annette Gregg and Lincoln Smith. Contact information for both of them will be included in the show notes, available at incentivemarketing.org/IESP. While you're there, we hope you check out our archived episodes. We will also link to some very useful research reports from the Society for Incentive Travel Excellence and the Incentive Research Foundation in the show notes. Finally, thanks to this episode's sponsor, HMI Performance Incentives. You can learn more about their services by contacting Lincoln Smith or visiting hmiaward.com.